This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is New York, by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. A little early 80s hip-hop. In honor of the Knicks winning the series last night.
So yesterday, by the way, I'm going to get into hoops in just a second, but yesterday I asked you, you had talked about Sinners at one point before you saw it, and now you've seen it, and you gave me a little bit of the review about Sinners. I also happen to know that you've, since we talked off the air, about that you've been to Barksdale's, the reconstituted, reinvented Barksdale's restaurant. What'd you think?
Yeah, I was sort of a semi-regular at Barksdale's back in the day. Maybe not a regular, but a frequent visitor, mostly for breakfast. I've gone a couple times since it's reopened, both for breakfast and for lunch, which I didn't used to do before. I'm really happy with the way that what they've done with it. It's Bryant Bain and his wife and his business partner, whose name I can't remember, who do, you know, Bain Barbecue there and Cooper Young. And I think they've updated it just enough, but not too much. And so it still has the same, it's cleaner. It still has the same, the same atmosphere, the same feel. They updated the menu a little bit, little tweaks here and there. I think there's some stuff that's a little bit more from scratch, maybe even than it was before, but they kept the vibe. They've kept the general approach to sort of, you know, just your basic, you know, straightforward Southern food, both breakfast and lunch. And I'm a fan of those kind of places, but you know, I feel like they're a dying breed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm real happy with the way they've updated it and kept it going.
All right. Onward to hoops. Knicks get the win over Detroit. Jalen Brunson with the crossover created roughly 72 feet of space. It was really quite something. But we were talking earlier. Like, I'm going to go ahead and presume the Knicks are going to probably lose to the Celtics. They lost every game in the regular season, their series, and I think only one of them was close. And this is something you talk about is, when is good good enough? Like, it's hard to be a championship team. If you are a Knicks fan and that's your fate, you lose in five games to the Celtics here, like, how would you think about it?
I don't know, man. Do people like watching basketball?
Right. That was fun last night, right? Yeah.
That game was fun last night. If I'm a Pistons fan, I thought that series was great.
Right.
I wish I won it, but it's great to be in competitive basketball games in the playoffs and like, people are yelling and screaming and players are going for it. And like, it's great. And like, at some point, only one team is going to win the last game and hold up a trophy. And there's 29 other teams, right? And so if it's you're miserable, if your team's not holding up to the trophy, I just think that's stupid. And so, no, this is a good era for the Knicks. It may end up coming up short in the sense of winning a title, and that'll be disappointing. But Knicks fans will always look back and love like the Brunson years, and they'll think that was great. That was a great time.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. And then we had the Clippers. even the series with Denver. You had picked the Clippers in this series. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I didn't see that one because I was too sleepy. I went to bed after the Knicks Pistons game, so I'm not really sure how that went about. But I think the Clippers are the better team. Now the Clippers are the better team that might lose the series, and sometimes that happens. But I thought them winning that game and getting it to seven was good because we get a game seven, which we're not going to get a lot of. And I do think that the Clippers have a better chance to push the Thunder in the second round, even though they don't have Nikola Jokic, just because of their depth and their defense and their multiple ball handlers they can sort of operate with on the perimeter. But I'll be interested to see what happens. Like, I think the Clippers are a little bit better, but not a lot better. And, like, the game seven is going to happen in Denver.
Yeah. We could get a game seven if the Rockets can go ahead and knock off the Warriors, but that'll be tough. That one's in Golden State, game six. One of the things that did happen in the Clippers-Denver game is Tyronn Lue made a change and put Batum in the second half rather than Ryan Dunn to sort of stretch the floor a little bit, create a little more space, and he was terrific.
Chris Dunn,
yes. And it reminded me, it made me think, now, he's not exactly a gritty veteran player, but he is a useful veteran player, right? Like, those guys having useful, but weren't the Grizzlies at some point in the Batum sweepstakes at some various whatever that they were looking a long time ago?
I don't know if there was ever
sweepstakes,
a sweepstakes
right.
for Batum. I don't know if Ed McMahon ever came to your door and said, congratulations, you get Nicholas Batum. But he was a free agent the same summer as Chandler Parsons.
That was it, yeah.
And he was one of the names being discussed. Is this a guy you could maybe go after? But everyone thought he was going to re-up and stay in Charlotte, which he did back then. That's right. Real ancient history. You know, Batum is exactly the kind of, I was actually looking at this this morning, last night at some point, thinking about this. Maybe I'll write about it at some point during the playoffs. And I've written before that the Grizzlies should try to add some veterans, in the back end of their roster. And not every roster spot has to be filled by a guy who just came off a two-way or a guy who's a second round pick or whatever. Take a shot on, the Nicholas Batums of the world, right? The veteran guys who are going to make it $3 or $4 million, whatever. And if you look around on the teams that are in the playoffs and teams that are having success in the playoffs, there are a handful of guys like that. And the Clippers have a couple of them. Those two guys you mentioned, Nicholas Batum and Chris Dunn, are sort of those kind of guys. There actually aren't a lot of guys like that in rotations on playoff teams. And if you really look closely, there are a lot of guys like that not in rotations on playoff teams. And so, you sign that guy, maybe you get Nicholas Batum, or maybe you get Dario Saric, who's making $5 million to not play for the Nuggets because he's not good enough, right?
Right.
And it is dicey. It's great when you hit on a guy like that. You've got a true veteran on a cheap contract who's playing for you. A lot of times you sign those guys and they're just not good enough.
Interesting. All right. John Hollander did his summary of the Grizzlies, his sort of roundup of the Grizzlies. And the truth of the matter is that if you read you and Drew, and if you listen to this show, you on the show, not a lot here is new, but it's a good summary and an interesting. He went out and got some perspectives from executives and granted them anonymity to talk about the Grizzlies. And a lot of the thing, again, pretty much everything, right down to the comparison with the Cavs and whatever is stuff we have talked about. But interesting nonetheless. So one of the things that in terms of why the Grizzlies haven't been...
I've not seen this, by the way. I did talk to John. John was in town for the series, and I talked to him. We went out and got coffee and stuff. So I talked to him about the story he was writing, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Well, he basically said, why haven't they been able to go from good to great? And first he says, that's hard. lots of teams are good and don't go to great. And he talked to execs, and there were four fundamental reasons. One is Ja Morant. You're building around a guy who it's impossible to build around, basically. I mean, they were pretty tough on Ja Morant. Second was Desmond Bane makes too much money for what he does. Third was you took a big swing at Marcus Smart and missed. And fourth was the bench. The bench that used to be, we've talked about extensively, and the bench that is now. The pieces that they've, some hope for Scottie Pippen and whatever else. But if you look at the bench from 3 years ago and what they had, basically those were the four sort of areas. But leading with some pretty tough language from the execs about Ja, and at one point he says, this is John writing, ultimately, it's hard to see the Grizzlies vaulting into true contention until the best player on the team is somebody other than Morant. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think that I haven't read the piece, right. So maybe there's some wider context.
There's a lot of wider,
yeah. Runs counter to what I'm about to say, but to me, that presupposes that Morant can't be the Morant he was 3 years ago. And to me, that's the question. I don't assume that he will, but I do think he can. And so I just don't know. The odds of getting the Morant you got 3 years ago, who was seventh in the MVP vote and second team All-NBA, versus the odds of the player you trade Morant for being that level of player, right? Which has better odds? You just tell me the odds for both are sub 50%, and you're just sort of stuck with it. And that might be true, but what are the better odds? That Morant becomes that level of player, or that the player you trade Morant for becomes that
right.
level of player?
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. I'll be honest, like the way they this is the first. By far, Morant was the biggest lightning rod for execs, explaining why Memphis hadn't taken another step forward. In their view, Morant's lack of dependability for health, for shooting, for defense, for leadership, for avoiding entirely avoidable suspensions makes it impossible to build a team around him. They kind of have gone to the, yeah, this ship has sailed a little bit. Like, it's not. But I think you're exactly right. What's the alternative? Is the alternative the player? Right. So.
And I don't think you're in a spot where you want to blow it up and say, this didn't work, we're starting over. I don't think anyone wants that.
Right.
I don't think fans want that. I don't think the organization wants that. I don't think anybody wants that.
What do you think of the idea that Desmond Bain makes too much money for what he does and therefore is of very little value in the trade market, which is basically what the execs are saying as well because of that?
I mean, that's a little stronger than I would say, the very little value, but I mean, I've already written
right.
basically that,
right, exactly.
that he is a high paid version. He's a high end version of a low value player type, meaning he is the single position scoring guard who is not good enough on the ball to be the hub of your offense. And so those kind of players, if you're just talking about player, positional types and what is in a general sense, your most important types, like the ball dominant creator who's the hub for your offense is probably number one. The versatile defender who can front court defender who can like anchor a defense and give you value on both ends of the floor is like number two. Well, that's John Morant and Jaren Jackson. And Desmond Bane is the secondary scorer you can't run things through, at least, at a high level. I mean, that is the kind of player who right. is less valuable when you have that player in a pretty big contract. And so I think they could trade Desmond Bane easily, but I don't know. It's sort of the same with Morant at a different level. It's like, right. can you trade him for the same player. Value that he provides?
Again, almost everything in here is things we've discussed. So, like, literally, there's nothing. It's just a nice. It's nice. It's interesting to see it from another perspective, and it's a nice, package. But there's a couple things I wanted you to weigh on, apart from the four things that he identified. One is, and I know you. This is something you talked about, but he basically said part of the reason the Grizzlies took a step back this year was intentional. Trading Smart for cap space at midseason was a smart way to maximize the team next year and beyond, but it came at cost to the 24-25 team. Obviously, the judgment lying not too far.
Let me stop you, though. That okay. is debatable, right? Was Marcus Smart going to help them or not? I mean, I don't think they believed that Smart was going right. to help them. So I don't think they thought they were subtracting from the team to do that.
Well, that gets to the – let me finish the sentence here. Obviously, the judgment lying not too far beneath the surface was that the current team wasn't quite good enough to contend. Do you think that was their approach at the trade deadline?
I think if you gave them truth serum, yes. I think that's part of the equation. But again, it's not the team's not quite good enough to contend, and so we'll sacrifice the help Marcus Smart would provide.
I see.
They didn't think Marcus Smart was providing help.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the part that this is where Jason and I both we glazed over because they got into the salary. He got into the about going forward. He got into the salary cap stuff with Jaren, and so I need you to help me explain to understand this. He said, assuming he gets to be all NBA, it's by far the better of the two scenarios. And then he says basically Memphis would have four open roster spots and $48 million below the apron, allowing access to its full non-taxpayer mid-level exception, and could either sign Aldama or Kennard or impactfully inject itself into several trade scenarios, et cetera, using Marvin Bagley, whatever. But that's sort of – In other words, this presupposes, I mean, this suggests that if you sign Jaren for all this money, there's still plenty of ways to get better in addition to that. Is that right?
For this year. And so this is the thing. I mean, you got to think about what your, if you're signing players to multi-year contracts, how that impacts when the new Jaren deal kicks in. And so if you sign Jaren, if Jaren makes All-NBA and you sign him to an extension that's somehow based on the All-NBA designation,
yeah,
that will not change his contract for this coming season, which is 23.4. So that money will start the next year. And so in terms of what you're doing this summer to build your team for next season, you have Jaren on $23.4 million.
The new extension
won't have started yet. And at that point, and again, it's depending on lots of other things, but to simplify at that point, I think you could access the full mid-level, which is what he's using longer language for that,
yeah,
which I think could be an important tool to help the team. But if Jaren does not make All-NBA and you still and you pursue an extension now, that's going to be the renegotiate and extend, which is going to mean you're going to try to up his contract this season.
I see.
Up his contract for this season, you're going to close off some of those other pathways.
I see. Then you've got to be renouncing Kennard and Bagley and whatever else, and you've got to be clearing money for this year. So it's sort of the idea that you can give Jaren the most money also creates the most flexibility or more flexibility to improve the team for this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the cost of a bigger contract long term and whatever the long term ramifications of that are.
I see. Well, there you go. That piece is up at the Daily at the Athletic. People can read it there. Again, it's much of the same stuff that Chris has gone into, gone over extensively going forward. It is. It's just like there are so many teams that have been good and struggled to get to great. I was thinking about that old Portland team that the Grizzlies beat, the Dame Lillard, LaMarcus Aldridge. You know that team. I don't know what they once dreamt of. But they didn't achieve it, did they? What's the best that team ever did? Finals?
I think they got to a conference finals and got swept, much like the Grand Grizzlies did. I can't remember. I think maybe against the Warriors, they got to a conference finals and got swept. But my thing with, I'm just not even, and maybe this is defeatist right. or whatever, but I'm saying I don't think about it in terms of a championship. I think about it in terms of like they've won one playoff series. Let's win some more playoff series.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the other era won four playoff series. Like this era has won one. Let's win some more.
Win some more playoffs.
That's what my attitude would be.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Did you understand that before, George, or do you understand it now?
I understand it a lot better now.
That's one of the great things about having Chris on. I understand it a lot better now. And I even read the words from John, and now I understand it. Much better now. So there you go.
The value of having someone smarter.
It is a big summer. There are decisions to be made. All right. If you're thinking about getting engaged, you don't have a lot of decisions. You just have one. Here, I'll help you. Go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. That would be the decision that I would recommend. Because Robert Irwin Jewelers, Howie, is absolutely passionate about diamond rings. They've got a large collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. I'll be honest, when I went in and I got some diamond earrings recently, Howie wasn't even trying to say, you got to get the natural. He said, get the lab-grown. They're less expensive, and they are actual diamonds. They're not fake diamonds. They're just lab-grown diamonds. They are, in fact, diamonds. And he said, well, get the lab-grown. Like, some people want the engagement ring itself to be a natural diamond as opposed to a lab. You can make a choice. He's got a massive selection of both natural and lab-grown diamonds. And, of course, any engagement ring, custom-made engagement ring, you bring it in, you have a picture, you have an idea, they'll create it. And then, with the meant-to-be guarantee, 365-day, no-questions-asked return policy. Just one of the yet another reason. Peace of mind that comes with shopping at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They've got 5 locations. I go to the one right across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. Check them out online at rijewelers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show on a Friday, 92.9.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. George has helped me throughout this entire week as Jeffrey has been away on the coast. And you've been getting updates every day, right?
You've been Oh yeah.
I've
been keeping up with him.
Listened to a little bit. He played golf, did not play well, as I recall. Yeah, played golf, did not play well. All right, let's play Believe It or Not. You're going to wager on the Kentucky Derby this weekend.
I am not.
I do not believe you. Do not believe that. No, I'm not either. But here you go. Ready? I'm going to have you pick your Derby horse. It's this Saturday is the Derby.
Okay.
I've been to the Derby. I used to cover the Derby back in the glory days when the newspapers printed money and I covered everything. and that was fun, covering the Derby. But here you go. Ready?
Yeah.
Just basis on name alone.
Okay. Because I'm the worst at this.
Right. Yeah, you go. Just basis on name alone. You'll hear them all, and then you decide which you think is the fastest horse based on its
this should
name.
This should be Fade George instead of Fade.
Fade
Brad.
George.
Yeah.
How is Brad doing? He was
off to a really hot.
That's
start.
The problem. He was winning the whole Fading. He has good. So the Fading Brad is back. It's a money winning gambit. Anyway, Citizen Bull.
Okay.
Neo Equos.
Mm-hmm.
Final Gambit.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Okay, that's your leader so far?
Yeah.
American Promise.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Admire Daytona. Luxor Cafe. Mm. Here's the one close, near and dear to my heart.
Is it journalism?
Journalism.
Yeah, we had
journalism.
Drew was telling us about journalism yesterday.
What did he tell you about journalism?
That he's actually the betting favorite.
Journalism is absolutely the betting favorite. Journalism is trained by a guy who... he didn't lose his house in the fires in Los Angeles, but his whole neighborhood was torched. His house is still standing. And it was interesting. I was reading an interview with him and he just kept saying over and over again, I'm fine. I'm fine. We're fine. Now he hasn't been able to live in the house because the whole area is filled with toxicity. Mm-hmm. I've used that word twice now in this radio show, so there's nothing. His house still stands, but they've been living somewhere else, and he's deeply sensitive to all of his neighbors whose houses were completely torched. So he just keeps saying, I'm fine. I'm fine. He's obviously not fine. Nobody who was touched by that fire is fine. And he also doesn't want if they win, to be some sort of story about redemption and whatever because of fire. Like, he is so conscious of the fact that people who've really been hurt by this, but anyway, journalism is the betting favorite, but you're still sticking with Final Gambit at this point?
I'm going to stick with Final Gambit. I like
it. Okay, Burnham Square.
Mm.
How about this one? Flying Mohawk.
It's not bad.
You're not coming off of Final Gambit.
It's between that and journalism, and I'm definitely thinking on journalism a lot because our good buddy Drew Hill.
Right, I see.
That was his pick.
Journalism is not... doing well right now as a field. Like, you wouldn't think betting on journalism would be, it's like betting on pay telephone, you know, or betting on
true.
Horse and buggy kind of thing. Like, journalism is
not horse and buggy. I don't know how.
Okay. Burnham Square. I said that. Flying Mohawk. Yep. East Avenue.
Okay.
There's a certain theme here. Publisher.
Yeah.
Publisher and journalism in the same race. Tiztastic.
Hmm.
Render Judgment. Coal Battle, Sandman, Sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
Chunk of Gold,
okay.
Owen Almighty, and Baeza.
Huh. Do you have any insight on how these names
are? It's a big field. No. No, I do think they make some... It's one of these where they look at the sire and the dam, and they're often derivative in some way, right?
Ah.
Like... I think they often relate to the sire or the dam is sort of how that is how it works. But anyway, have you had a deal like a mint julep? I don't believe I've ever had a mint julep.
I don't think I've ever had one either.
Yeah, so there you go. Anyway, Derby is this Saturday. Okay. News is that Texas football may have a payroll this year of $40 million. So here you go. Here's the believe it or not. A $40 million payroll for a college football team is ridiculous.
I believe that 100%.
You believe it?
Why? So,
$40 million. Kirk Bowles is a longtime columnist in... Now, Texas hasn't said that. Texas hasn't confirmed it. Texas won't say it. But Kirk Bowles, who is a deeply respected columnist in Texas, said that that's the number. And so that's where we're operating from. So
How many roster slots do they get? I know in the NFL it's 53.
What is it, 85?
Is it, if it's 85, and we're talking about, especially for a team like Texas, of all teams, you know, we know they've always been high rollers for forever now. Is it ridiculous that that is kind of where we're at? Yes.
Is it?
But for Texas, that doesn't shock me. I think that's kind of where
I'm sitting. These numbers, we don't really know. You know, no one releases the numbers. And so everyone would love to know. Like, we'd love to know, what's PJ Hegarty really getting? What's, like, Dane Danger really getting? We would all really love to know these numbers.
It's all secondhand reporting.
They don't release these numbers. Well, sometimes, like, Ross Bjork did say that Ohio State's payroll last year was $20 million. And he actually said that. I don't know if he said ballpark or whatever, but that came from...
I have trust issues with Ross Bjork. That
may be. But it came from a whatever. And I think I've heard various numbers around Ole Miss, half that, something like that, last year. Here's the thing. I totally understand the backlash, the public backlash against this, because... it's not honestly the amounts of money. Mm-hmm. It's the chaos, right? It's the...
Yes.
I think fans are mostly, when they're reacting, if PJ Hegarty were quietly getting $3.5 million to stay at Memphis, I don't think people would really care one way or another, right? But when they hear he wants $4 million and it's public and he's hanging out there and it's like the public part of it, the fact that everyone can jump, you know, year to year to year to year. There's no stability. And I think that's what people are reacting to. I don't actually think that for the University of Texas to be paying $40 million for its football team is unreasonable or crazy or anything else. And here's the reason. Their athletic revenue last year at Texas was $331 million. $331.9 million.
Pretty good ROI.
So why in the world, if they're bringing in $331 million, you have to figure that most of that relates to football. It either relates to football in terms of the TV revenue you're getting from football, or the ticket sales you're getting from football, or just the merchandise that football is selling, or the contributions that alumni are making because they love football.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. That's where almost all that money is coming from. And so why wouldn't it go to the players? Like in the NBA and the NFL and where there is a salary cap, fundamentally the way the salary cap is calculated in the NBA is it's roughly 50% of the players get roughly 50% of the money. And that's how you determine that every team has to play, you know, pay between this and this. So the money... yeah, sure. It would be nice if we lived in a world where coaches made $300,000 and players came to play for a scholarship and pizza money on the side maybe or whatever else. But here's the problem. There is this giant faucet of TV money that is pouring money into the university. Where the hell do you want it to go? Do you think that John Calipari or whatever else? I mean, is it Lane Kiffin should be getting $50 million as opposed to whatever he gets paid? What does Lane get paid now? 12, 10, 9, 8,
I think it's nine,
whatever?
Nine and a half.
He gets plenty of money.
Oh,
why the
absolutely.
Hell? Absolutely. I totally get that the system seems crazy and unstable and everything else. But the notion that Texas football players are being paid $40 million when they bring in most of the $331 million is not actually irrational at all. Why shouldn't they? Okay, next. You believe that, I hate to even bring this topic up, but there was an interesting piece on this, and that's why I'm bringing it up again. You believe that Bill Belichick and all the hubbub around his girlfriend will distract him and will be is evidence that he is not going to do a bang up job as the head coach at North Carolina.
Which interesting piece, but by chance, are you referring to?
A Dan Wetzel piece. Did you read a Dan Wetzel piece? What piece did you read? Is there another piece that I'm not aware
of?
The
only one that I'm aware of that I read was the one on the New York Post, which
Didn't read this one.
I think this I did not know.
Oh, about her buying the houses?
I think it was. It started
was,
about buying the houses.
There was one about since she started dating Bill Belichick,
she's like
become a real estate mogul. Yeah, yeah. She owns four houses, whatever else. Dan Wetzel wrote a piece, and Dan,
Where can I find this by chance?
Dan's at SI. Dan's now at ESPN.
Okay.
Dan's now at ESPN, I think. I think Dan has gone to ESPN. I think.
Yes, you're right.
So what he points out is that Belichick has, for the duration of his career, lived in the midst of controversy, and it hasn't made it any difference. And it didn't make me think about this. For example, here you go. This is from...
I found the piece that you write.
From,
it is on ESPN.
This is from... the piece. Belichick doesn't just thrive in the briar patch of controversy. He seems to prefer it. The more external noise, the better. Here we go. A former player standing trial for murder? Win the Super Bowl. That's Aaron Hernandez, right?
Oh, yep.
Accused of illegally videotaping opponents? Post a 16-0 season. A star quarterback alleged to have cheated to win the AFC Championship game by deflating footballs? Name drop my cousin Vinny in a news conference, then win the Super Bowl. Have the team get fined, stripped of a first-round draft pick, and the quarterback suspended for the start of the season? Win another Super Bowl. And on and on and on. It even goes back to, remember when he took the Jets job? Giants job.
It
was the Jets job.
Yep.
Like, it's not
like,
like
4 days.
Bill Belichick has succeeded in a tranquil sea over the course of his career. Bill Belichick has always lived in the midst of controversy, and it has mattered not a whit. So I kind of hope he succeeds.
I think the other part of this that we have to look at is also in, like we just talked about with the University of Texas, using all this, you know, having all this funding. Do we also have to temper those expectations because of location? He's at
the University of
North Carolina. Like, what do we expect their football program to be, even in a weakened, you know, Atlantic Coast Conference?
I do think it actually, in some ways, it works to his advantage.
Yes, agreed.
The expectations are not that he's going to win the national title, right?
Yeah, he's not at.
If he could get to the playoff.
Oh, that's the.
Oh, my God.
That would be. Probably one of the biggest upsets, you know, in modern college football history.
Not necessarily even this year. How many years is he going to coach?
He's already, 71?
Is he going to coach four?
What was his contract that he signed with UNC?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. I would probably give him 3 to 4 years, maybe.
Yeah. I don't actually think it's totally crazy that he would get to the
playoff. He got a 5-year, $50 million.
Seem unlikely because you got to be better than Clemson or you got to be better than Florida State, and it seems unlikely. That's not what North Carolina normally
does. And SMU now?
And SMU now. Yeah, it seems unlikely. But I don't completely rule it out. Okay. Henry Ruggs, once he has served his time in prison, deserves the chance to play NFL football again.
As much as the NFL is all about second chances, I don't believe it.
You don't believe it.
I
so
don't.
Henry Ruggs.
As I feel people, like there's a line, right?
As people may recall, Henry Ruggs, first round pick of the Raiders, was drag racing, drunk as hell, I think, too, and killed someone. Slammed his car into her car and killed her, right?
Yes.
So he went to jail for 3 to 10 years. But Josh Jacobs, his former teammate at Alabama and with the Raiders, keeps in touch with him. And he said on a podcast the other day that he is training in prison. And he is eligible for parole in 26.
Okay? Yes, next August.
Next August. Now, he is right now 26 years old, so we're going to go ahead. I don't know when his birthday is. We'll presume he's going to be 27 when he comes out of prison. I don't know. I guess he could be in pretty good shape when you come out of prison. What else does he have to do, right?
Yes, so at will, that he'll point, be 20, he'll be 27.
At that point, would you be mad if your Jets picked him up and gave him a shot? You would.
I
don't think he deserves another chance.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
he deserves it. Okay, would it matter to you what the family of the victim said?
I think it would.
If the family of the victim said he served his time, we think he deserved. Like, the other thing is, honestly, will he get another shot? It's kind of interesting.
I think there's a difference between deserves and will.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, oh, no, there is. I don't know that he will because he wasn't that good. I forgot that he actually played. This was not after his rookie year.
He played
20 games, so it must be 2 seasons.
Wow.
He was in 20 games.
Not great.
He caught 50 passes, 920 yards, and 4 TDs. That is not great. I have no doubt that if he had been a 1,400-yard receiver each of those 2 years, that he would get another chance. I think, like so many things, the fact that he was mediocre when he was young and at his best might mean he is not going to get a chance. But actually, I don't know. Like, it was a horrible thing to do.
Yes.
I'll tell you this. I've driven drunk. I could have slammed into someone, and do I want that to define and ruin my life? It would. If you killed someone, it would pretty much define your life.
Yes.
But should it be the end of existence forever and ever and ever once I've gone to jail and served my time? I think Henry Ruggs, I don't know, deserves. I have no problem with Henry Ruggs getting another shot. I think it's probably unlikely he will get another shot because he's not good enough.
I definitely think it's unlikely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Shedeur Sanders is going to start a football game. We'll wrap up because a week ago we were talking about Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders is going to start a football game this year for the Cleveland Browns.
I believe it.
You believe it?
I do. I just at this
How
point...
is it going to play out? How is that whole quarterback? So there's Flacco. There's Kenny Pickett.
Yes.
There's not Deshaun Watson anymore. There's Dylan Gabriel and there's Shedeur Sanders. You tell me how this quarterback's controversy is going to play out. Competition.
At the very least, just based on roster size, by the time we get through training camp, one or two of those guys are going to have to be cut.
Okay, and it won't be Gabriel, and it won't be Shedeur Sanders.
It won't be Sanders. So we know
so
those two.
So you think either Flacco or Kenny Pickett will be cut?
It would not shock me if it is
Kenny Pickett,
even though they just traded an asset for him. But
what'd they give up for him?
It was like a fifth-round pick. It wasn't.
Was it a fifth even? Fifth is kind of valuable.
Let's find out. Also, there is some breaking news we do need to probably talk a little bit about. From ESPN, from Shams Charania, Greg Popovich will no longer be the head coach of the Spurs and is transitioning full-time to team president.
Well, there you go. I don't think that's a shocker. The interesting question will Taylor Jenkins be the next head coach? Where will Taylor Jenkins go? He obviously has deep roots in San Antonio, right?
Yeah. Or who ends up there.
Yeah, or who ends up there. Okay. Back to the topic.
Yes.
Flacco, Pickett, Gabriel, and Shedeur. One of Pickett or Flacco will be cut.
Eagles traded Pickett in exchange for a fifth-round selection and Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Okay. I'll buy that one of them is going to be cut and the other one's going to start. You're going to say that? The other one's going to start the opener?
Yes.
You believe that? Okay. Okay, so then what's going to happen?
I think they're just going to continue to struggle as they did last season. I mean, we saw last season that offense sputtered most of the year. It only looked good at times because they just said, hey, Jameis Winston, throw the ball 50 times a game.
So they'll sputter, and at some point they'll lose enough games and they'll want to give a rookie a chance, and it'll be one of these two rookies, and you think it'll be Shador.
Even though from everything we've heard after the fact now that it seems like Dylan Gabriel was Kevin Stefanski's preferred quarterback out of this draft class, turns out there were a bunch of extra workouts they did with Dylan Gabriel outside of...
They didn't put him down. He had one of their 30 visits,
yes,
and they did not list him. It was sort of an under the radar. They were trying to keep... That suggests we really like him. We don't know anyone else to know we really like him. And here's what's interesting to me is if you look at the way that he talks about these guys, it's just totally different. They talk. Here's how he talked about Dylan Gabriel. Ready?
Mm.
This is Barry. We really felt strongly about Dylan throughout this process. You know, I think he's a really strong, really, really good prospect. You know, that's not to say we didn't with other quarterbacks that we thought were really talented and players, good people, but we felt strongly about Dylan. We think he's an excellent player and felt like he was the most appropriate player to pick. Like, that's like, we like Dylan Gabriel, right?
Yes.
Here's what he said about Shador Sanders. Did, by the way, deny that Haslam had anything, that this was an owner's pick. But of course he would. Yes, he was forced by my owner. He was never going to say that, right?
Never.
And this is what he said. We felt like it got to a point where he was probably mispriced relative to the draft. Really, the acquisition cost was pretty light, and it's a guy we think can outproduce his draft slot. Now, you tell me, who's going to win the job? The guy who was acquired because the acquisition cost was pretty light, and we think he can outproduce his draft slot? Or the guy who we think is a really strong, really, really good prospect, really talented, and good person? Like, who's going to win that job?
That might be what they're saying now, but if you asked me, you know, even pre-draft, who I graded higher or who I thought had a better shot at becoming a productive NFL quarterback, I would tell you Shador Sanders over Dylan Gabriel 10 out of 10 times.
So you're sticking with it?
I'm sticking with it.
You're sticking with your own personal... scouting conviction that Shador will win the job. It won't be because Shador's popular or because they need to generate interest, whatever else. It'll be you think Shador will start. Do you think Dylan Gabriel will also start a game?
It's the Browns. We never know. That's a coin flip. It could be both. They could just alternate back and forth.
Yeah.
Barry
also said, by the way, we felt like it wasn't necessarily the plan going into the weekend to select two quarterbacks, but as we talk about, we do believe in best player available. We do believe in positional value, and we didn't necessarily expect him to be available in the fifth round. We love adding competition to every position room and adding him to compete with the guys that are already in there. We felt like that was the appropriate thing to do. So there you go. All right. I mentioned before, we got to wrap up here in just a second, but I mentioned before, it is, you know, people can be gloomy these days, it seems to me, about Memphis, but it is a big weekend in Memphis. You got the Riverbeat Music Festival going on tonight, Missy Elliott, Ludacris, among others. Tomorrow, we got the Killers. I don't know if the Alton Brown thing is sold out at the Orpheum, but that is happening. I'm going to a benefit. Pete Pranica invited me to go to a benefit of the Tennessee Shakespeare folks. They're having a benefit Saturday. So it is a big weekend in Memphis. Get out there and do something in your city. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Anthony Sain joins Jason and John at 11:30. Blake Topmeyer joining Jeffrey at 2:40. And you. Well, it's actually, excuse me, not you. It's a
not
Friday.
Me. I'm
it
done.
It will be David Cobb
I'm
at
done.
5 o'clock.
I'm done.
You're done with games?
I have a great weekend, everybody. George, thanks very much for helping prop this show up for the week. Jeffrey will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. For now, our work is done.